Welcome. We don't wanna change the world. Welcome, welcome, friends. Welcome, friends. Oh, here we are. Another episode of the Rational Revolution where, well, I think these conversations just took on a little bit more meaning here over the last week. I hope you are okay. I hope you're doing well. We're going to talk a little bit about some of the fallout in my musings, part of it. Because there's a message I really want to get out. And so I hope you stick around for that because that's something that, that means a lot to me. But here to kind of break things down is my dear friend and yours, Mr. Carlton Huffman. What's up, buddy?
Well, coming to you from the great state of North Carolina, the one silver lining I can sit here and say from this, we had a choice between our first Jewish governor and Mark Robinson, a self-described black Nazi, and the good guys won down the ballot on this
one.
So we can at least say, as far as North Carolina, despite our top-of-the-ticket performance, that there are some silver linings in what was otherwise a very rough Tuesday.
No black Nazi for North Carolina. That's good. That was good.
Yeah, and it seems like Democrats were able to break the Republican supermajority in one of the chambers here in North Carolina. But, about the 8 o'clock on Tuesday evening, as the numbers started to really roll in, that's when I knew that a lot of the assumptions that we made about the course of the election and in some ways about just the thinking of the country were off base, and now we've got 4 years ahead of us, but also some generational implications that we're just going to have to deal with now.
Yeah, you know, and in reference to the candidate for governor, that is what he described himself as on more than one occasion. So it's not us saying that. That was self-glossed by that candidate.
I would sit here and say, this being a family show, if you were to Google Mark Robinson in the CNN article, I would just say, be sure your kids are not around for that
one. That's wild.
What they unearthed was not just wild, but just the fact that that man was a heartbeat away from the governor's mansion already. Was a testament to what happens when you don't bet your candidates well enough.
So, on election night, I was invited to speak at a rally that was put on to kind of just talk about accepting the results and making sure every vote counts and all that. And so that started at like 8:06. We got home about 8:45. And seeing these returns come in, and that was kind of my first indication where it's like, oh my gosh, this is not good. And then the biggest thing for me was when we saw that the poll from Iowa was wrong. That was the biggest. It's like, okay, this is not good.
Yeah, and I mean, when we saw it too, looking at the early numbers coming in from Florida, where it had been semi-competitive last time 4 years ago, and it was not competitive at all. And Trump ran up the biggest score of any Republican running in the state of Florida since George H.W. Bush in 1988. And the fact that New Jersey was closer than Florida, if you had ever told me that in my political lifetime, I would not have believed it. But that is where we are and just where we saw just the country as a whole. 16 million less people voted in this election than in the 2020 election. And Donald Trump, he got 2 million less votes than he did 4 years ago, but the biggest drop-offs and shifts were in the Biden coalition that had been put together in 2020, and unfortunately, Kamala Harris just was not able to do it, even with a lot of structural advantages in terms of money, in terms of net favorability, but the Trump campaign, to their credit, I mean, they were, I think we had said it on previous episodes, the people on that campaign were focused political killers, unlike his previous campaigns.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, it's interesting. I think there was someone on online that I kind of got into it a little bit with, and she was saying that, like, that Kamala Harris, her coalition was bad because they kowtowed to Dick Cheney. You know, and this person's very, you know, she's a very, very much on the left side. And I was like, that's not at all. That's not where the lack of support came from. The support was there in 2020, and that support was still there now. That support was there in during his first election with all the Never Trumpers. So it's like that part of the coalition is not something that moved. It was more of the far left that just dropped off.
And you can definitely say in the state of Michigan that
yes.
played a big impact, especially among some of the predominantly Muslim communities in the Detroit area. But also, too, it was something that, I mean, we saw it in 2016 and in 2020. Trump just ran up the score. I mean, if you get outside of a lot of the major metropolitan areas, Trump just ramped up the score. I mean, every time he's been on the ballot, it has only gotten stronger out in rural America. But one of the things that we also saw, too, and we even saw it in Milwaukee, we saw it in Philadelphia, is that black men and Hispanic men trended more towards Trump. And a lot of it, we can get into the nuts and bolts of it on some of the cultural issues that were weaponized by the Trump campaign and in some ways hypocritical fashion. But those cultural issues were weaponized to great effect, basically put together one of the more racially diverse Republican winning coalitions that they've ever had.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think it's kind of wild to me that, you know, that Muslims in Michigan sat this one out in mass. Like, it's not a little. And do you realize what you're doing is you're going to help allow the Muslim ban president to get back in office to do that same stuff again, you know? And I think it's very frustrating where, you know, on the right, we've talked about these litmus tests that they've had about, you know, oh, what do you think about Trump? You know, and that was like the measuring stick of where you are. But now here on the left, it's like, what the hell are you doing? Like, do you understand? If we have 100,000 people who are of Muslim faith in Detroit, and they're like, we're going to sit this one out. You're going to sit out the election of the guy that, like, one of his first acts in office was the Muslim ban. You're going to sit this one out, really?
Yeah, and you got to remember, too, that Donald Trump on multiple occasions throughout the course of this campaign used the word Palestinian as a slur upon people.
Right.
And so it's just something that it's staring you right in the face. But I think our mutual friend from the Bulwark, Tim Miller, summed it up in the most succinct way that I can find possible. It's that a very good thing happened to the worst people in this country. And I don't say that as a sweeping indictment of all Trump supporters. I know the economy, even though by looking at us in relation to the rest of the world, we have the best economy, and there is like no close contender. But the hangover from COVID definitely persisted, and when you have a incumbent president, Joe Biden, with a approval rating that has not been in positive territory since August of his first year in office, it was the fact that Kamala Harris even kept it close in some ways was, a great testament to her personally. But
yes,
so much of the country was, whether it is an affirmative statement on Trumpism and the man himself, or a protest vote against the Democrat Party, Joe Biden in particular, but also some of the cultural directions that the Democrat Party took in the last 10 years, the end result is the same, that Donald Trump won the presidency with a majority of the popular vote for the second time that Republicans have won the popular vote since 1988.
Yeah. I mean, she had an impossible task. You know, she really did. It was the campaign was about 100 and some odd days. Like,
yeah.
I mean, you know, that and she had Joe Biden did not do a good job on the border. And that was, I think that was one of the key issues that just crushed her. You know, and it's so funny. You know, people talk about how, you know, she's the border czar and all this other kind of stuff. And it's like blaming that issue or really the economy or any issue on Kamala Harris is like saying the Packers lost because of Malik Willis, right? The backup quarterback who didn't take one snap. So, you know, to me, that's a wild thing. Like, it's not fair. It's not real. It's these arguments are not based in reality. But the Trump people did such a good job at making it seem like it is.
Yeah, and I'll say one other issue that they weaponized to great effect was the taxpayer dollars for transgender yes. surgeries for prisoners. And the fact is that was a Trump administration policy. It started under him, not even under Barack Obama. It started under him. And I believe for the entirety of the Biden presidency, I believe there were only two of those surgeries. But as someone who, like I said, up until very recently worked exclusively in Republican politics, that issue, they find an issue almost every generation. During the Reagan years, it was welfare queens.
Yeah.
During the Bush years, it was gay marriage. Yeah. And now this is the latest iteration of finding that wedge issue that makes it a values statement as opposed to the actual facts.
Right.
And that was something that definitely among Black and Latino men was deadly in terms of depressing her numbers among them. And it's just something that she, and I would say not just her personally, but I'd say definitely the Democrat Party as a whole has to figure out how to approach yeah. those issues in a way that is sensitive to the realities of individuals going through that part, a very delicate situation in their life,
yeah.
but saying to the culture as a whole, we understand you have misgivings about it too, and not just rejecting those misgivings as bigotry, but also at the same time, making sure that that's communicated clearly. And that's something that the Democrats and the Harris campaign in particular, I don't believe that they saw how damaging it was until it was too late.
Right. And it's what's so frustrating and sad is how that issue, which is a non-issue, you know, that was, like you said, that was the poster child of what was going on. We're going to continue this discussion here with my dear friend Carlton Huffman here on The Rational Revolution. We'll be right back. We are love.